overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration Service for the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
I invite you to receive the greatest gift that life has given us. The greatest gift is silence. The Bible says, "Be still and know that I am God." And so as we enter into that stillness, which is the language of God, and we begin to listen with our open-hearted awareness, we realize that the one place we don't need to go is into our neurotic mind that wants to awfulize and suppose and conclude, and all the things that the mind does is not the place that we need to be right now. In meditation, you learn to be aware of the one within us that wants answers. That's your ego. And so I invite you to step out of the one that wants the answers and open to the place of the unknown, open to uncertainty, open to that place of discovery where a higher intelligence within all of us is starting to awaken, an intelligence that knows that we are one. There's one life on this planet. It expresses in diversity. Every flower, every tree, every insect, every animal is all part of this one life. And so it's imperative that we start off by realizing that there is only one, the absolute, and we are that absolute. An image that I love to conjure up is that we think we're fluffy clouds in the sky, all uniquely different. And sometimes our storm cloud gets dark and we want to make it nice and white and fluffy until one day we say, "Oh my God, I'm the sky, I'm not the cloud anymore." And then we begin to experience a field of consciousness, a field of love, a field of awareness, and we are that. In Sanskrit, they say, "Tatvam asi," thou art that. And so we start this Sunday service by knowing that we are the very awakening presence on the planet. And this Sunday, we're going to experience the flow of awakening. This awakened presence, and we've all touched upon it, even if you're only 19, there is that something that has awakened within you that is greater than the local mind. The local mind is programmed and conditioned by our habits, by our family, by our religions, by society. And we're letting that local conditioned self fall away for this brief time. And we're starting to remember that which is deathless and eternal. Let's call it your soul. That which was never born and that which never dies. And just touch upon that within yourself. A good reference point for me is my animals. I've had so many, I'm 73, that have made their transition. And last night as I was lying in bed in the 11-year-old pug is lying by my side snoring with his one eye with cataracts and his ears that can't hear. All of a sudden, I felt the presence of Baby Speck on the right pillow in the corner of the room. I felt Bert in the other corner of the room. And right between my legs was Baby Smudge, the cat, purring. And I realized they're all still here. Their spirit is here with me. And you can call me slightly crazy, but the gift of that awareness is that they're trying to show me from the spiritual realm that this love never dies. Michael's beautiful Tess made a lamp from a bottle with light bulbs in it. And Michael gave it to me. And she's no longer on the planet. But this beautiful thing that she made is. And every time I touch a button and the light goes on within the bottle, I feel Tess is smiling down on me, reminding me that I'm still here. And so this Sunday, I invite you to step out of the local mind, step out of time, and into the eternal now moment. We're teaching a class by John Burney called Ordinary Freedom. And he has some beautiful satsangs on YouTube. And he asked this satsang, he said, I want to ask you a question that I don't want an answer. And the question he asked is, what is the difference between the past, the present, and the future? And he says, I'll tell you the answer to that question. Merely a thought. It is our thoughts that would have us dwell on the past. Our thoughts that would have us obsess on the present situation. Our thoughts that would project into the future. And when you separate yourself from thinking, well, then who are you? And that's the invitation. To step out of belief, to step out of thought, to step out of the local mind, the cloud, if you will, and to experience the vastness of awake awareness. It's an inside job. You know, on Sunday, every morning, I plant seeds. And these are seeds that go into the subjective soil of our consciousness. Now, we get to ask ourselves, what seeds are we watering? Are we watering the seeds of forgiveness or the seeds of hate? Are we watering the seeds of acceptance or the seeds of resistance? And it's not that there's a right seed or a wrong seed to water, but we are a choice point. We cannot live a choiceless life. Every moment, we get to choose who we will be on this planet. When I was a very young lost soul, maybe Ari's age, someone sent me a card with a quote that changed my life. And that quote said simply, in oneself lies the whole world. And if you know how to look and to learn, then the door is there and the key is in your hand. But no one gives you the key or the door to open except yourself. And so at that very young age in New York City, I was lost. And I realized my answer wasn't going to come from the world. It had to come from within me. And I had to be willing to open that something within and start to listen to it. I bought a book recently on the bestseller of the New York Times list. It's called Finding Me, and it's Viola Davis's autobiography. And it's so profound. It got 5 stars. She talks about how she was lost as a young black girl in the South, and how her dysfunctional past, strangely enough, became the foundation for her liberation to finding herself. So what if wherever we find ourselves in life, it's the journey that we've been given, and we get to stop and give thanks for this crazy life that we've been given, and then look around and ask that simple question, how are we going to make our way in the world? How are we going to make our way in the world? These are troubled times in the world. And so we live in that question. In The Science of Mind, the first 4 chapters of The Science of Mind by Dr. Ernest Holmes, the first one is the thing itself. And the first week I talked about in this series, calling it in. That's the thing itself, this presence, this stillness, which I invited you to call in the stillness, the language of God. The first thing, you call it in. You call in the presence. You call in the peace. And then it's the recognition. Our Father, who art in heaven, it's this one presence. Heaven is within ourselves. So we're calling in the presence the first Sunday. That's the first step of prayer. The second one, last 2 weeks ago, I talked about inheriting the moment, that all we have is the moment, all we have is the now. Well, then the past and the present and the future all dissolve into the exquisite now, and you're inheriting it. And now in that inheritance comes the richness of the past. Beautiful David Copeland talked about when he met Jim Crow this morning in our revealing service, not as a living being, but as a construct of consciousness from a black woman when he's age 6, and she tells him, for your protection, she says, Jim Crow is in the door over there, the woman who is peeking out. And for your own safety, you need to be aware of these patterns in consciousness that are still there. Now, inheriting the now, we can see things as they are. Not calling them good or bad, but having a clarity. And as my beautiful friend Nancy said, you bless what is, and then you work on yourself. There's a lot of suffering taking place on our planet right now. There's a lot of, and I shared, well, Raul shared in our class that when he first came to the center at a transitional time in his life, I shared the nature of suffering. Talk about inheriting the now. And I said, the nature of suffering is when we have expectations. And we certainly had expectations in our country around the rights of the individual. I'm a gay man. I had expectations that things are going to change for us. Not so much now. It's a little bit of fear and trepidation. So we have expectations, and then sometimes the expectations go awry and we suffer. We have attachments. We have attachment to an outcome. And the outcome isn't what it's going to be. And then we suffer. So could we see the nature of expectation, the nature of attachment? And the last one, my favorite, and this is for my beloved Tia, is the nature of resistance. In John Burney's class that we're teaching, the last little satsang he gave is he said, resistance is just too much effort. Now that was liberating for me like you've never seen, Tia, because if I resisted it, it has power over me. So counterintuitively, John Burney says, when the stuff comes up that creates the resistance, you invite it in. And just by inviting it in, you begin to see it, not with your conditioned mind, your reactive mind, but with a part of you that says, this too is good. This too is for my transformation. And I demand to see the blessing. And sometimes the blessing is I have to be willing to die to an old aspect of my dream, my expectation, my attachments. That's all got to die in me, my resistance to seeming other. And then I set my own self free. It's all an inside job. So then the very thing that you resisted is the very thing that's setting you free. It's just too much effort to resist anymore. Oh, and then you smile because you're opening to the love, and love is all there is. Jesus said, love the enemy. Do good to those that hurt you. He recognized that there's only one. You know, he came 2,000 years ago to point the way, and he was saying things like, I of myself do nothing. It's the Father within that doeth the work. He recognized that there is this field of awareness, not Jesus. It's the Christ energy that worked through him. You know, and if you've seen me, he said, you've seen the Father. So it's all this presence, this awakening in time and space. And first it awakens within us. Then it awakens into us, because then we have to heal our unexamined parts. And then it expands into the world, and we realize it's all us. There's only that love. And then you fall in love with the world, is what I spoke about last week. Remember that song? Some of you are old enough. We are the world. We are the children. We are the ones who make a better place. So let's start giving. It's all you. So then what is your relationship to the world? Is it your own self? Or is it a commodity that you want to usurp? I have beautiful gardens. And it was the Buddha himself that says, all we're here to do is to tend our garden. And the bigger your garden gets, and the garden is your consciousness, well, the more tending it needs. So the more complicated, the more expanded, the more, and Gigi, this is for you. The more awake you get, the more we need to be vigilant at the doorway of our consciousness when saying, just saying all is well is not enough. Well, she's absolutely right. So then we get to meet that which isn't acceptable and embrace it too. I love Rumi, who says, this being human is a guest house, and come knocking at your door are the worries and the fears and the anxiety and the depression and the sadness of the planet. And instead of expurging them because they're uncomfortable, he says, invite them in. They may be coming to clean out your consciousness of your own patterns. And so we enter into this beautiful Sunday morning asking that essential question, how are we going to make our way in the world? And I had three little things that came up for me. The first one is to live in the flow of awakening. Something is awakening in all of us. You know, you keep coming back. Anne-Marie, you keep awakening. Even your gorgeous husband's awakening. And so allow the flow of this awakening. Now, for each one of us, it's different. You know, maybe it's your childhood stuff that's coming up. Well, that's there, so you can embrace it. And I see that happening collectively, because we have this wounded child that we all carry around, and she needs to be healed, he needs to be healed, with an equanimity that we're not separate. It's not like I'm the adult and here's this child. No, this child Remember Jesus said, be like a child if you would enter the kingdom? He recognized that our original innocence is where our wholeness resides. And so that beautiful treatment that Shay gave, and he says there is this place of wholeness within, at the center of our being, what if that's the child of innocence? That imagination, that part of us that doesn't know and yet is free in that not knowing. Serena lives in a childlike world. You know, it's only when she gets in her mind that she gets all convoluted. But when she stays in the purity of that innocence, well, then she lives in wonder and awe, and life begins to flow. So the first way to make our way in the world is to live in an awakened flow. I think it was Michael that sent me some videos on the Tao Te Ching, and I may teach it again. The very first book that Trey and I read, now we've been together 50 years, this threadbare brown little book is called the Tao Te Ching in the early 70s. And the Tao is the way. And in the Tao, it's a religion based on nature, not on Jesus, not on a savior, not on sin. There's no devil. There's no hell. They just say, look at nature and how she flows. And the counterintuitive in the Tao Te Ching, they talk about yin and yang. Yang is the masculine energy that we all have. And we have a culture that's based on yang. It's about fast. It's about doing. It's about having answers. I mean, it's the goal oriented. Our culture is all about yang. Do, succeed. Yin is entirely different. Yin is the part of ourselves that surrenders, that's vulnerable, that's open, that's sensitive. And the counterintuitive, the strength is in our vulnerability. Nobody wants to hear that in the Western world. The strength is in your not knowing. We got it wrong, folks. We need to go back to the drawing table and figure out how to present love to the world. I wonder what they're saying in all the churches around Huntsville today. You know, who are they going to go after next? That's what the little gay boy in me says. I don't feel safe here. Listen to the Tao Te Ching, just a titch. He says, that which is most yielding, that's the inner feminine, eventually overcomes what is most resistant in us. Whoa, you mean I'm supposed to surrender to the aliveness of the universe, Michael? I think so. I'm not here to control things and make my way, stomping my foot and telling people how to change. Well, I think that's the path of suffering. Holy cow, tell that to the protesters. That which is not becomes that which is. Do you see how beautiful it is? That invisible something that is flowering within Ari will eventually become what she is, and it's not defined by a job. Acting without coercing or being coerced is best. We're not here to fix things. We're not here to manipulate. Acting without coercing. Show up as an example in life. Then he says, guiding by example rather than by words or commands is the most successful. To be the example of what you want to see in the world. That was Gandhi that said, you know, what the freedom that you want to see, be that. And he says, such simple truths are extremely hard for most humans to understand. The simple truth, to flow like water. And then they premise, this is called the water course way. The water is gentle. It always seeks the lowest place. So what if we, as water, could find that lowest place in us, that original part of us that's contracted, the original contraction, where something is triggered, and let that beautiful feminine embrace that? That's why satsang is so powerful, because you create a field of energy where that unhealed stuff can come up and be met. And once it's met, it just kind of dissolves. Because it's no longer subversively running the show in you. You're no longer a victim. You can tell when you're arriving at this new consciousness because you don't live in victimhood. You don't blame the world. It's not a to-me consciousness anymore. You realize that life is for you, and even the stuff that is the darkness is the fuel for the light. So then the darkness comes up to be met by the light. You don't run away from the darkness. So when Ari comes to me with her little dark self, I let my light come to it. And after a while, it doesn't take very long, the light starts to shine in her because we're one. We're not separate. The more you have, the more you have to lose. This is Taoism. Let me go on to here. There is no greater evil. Adam, this is one for you. There is no greater evil than desiring to change others. Oh, are you kidding? My whole life's about trying to change everybody. There's no greater evil than desiring to change others. And then he says, there's no greater misfortune than desiring to change oneself and being discontented with one's lot. In other words, learn to love and accept yourself just the way you are. When Louise Hay came to Atlanta in the early 80s and the AIDS crisis was, oh my God, exploding, she realized it was an act of self-hatred. And her first message to all these dying young men was to learn to love themselves and accept themselves right where they are. And so she would bring in a little chant. I love myself the way I am. There's nothing I need to change. I'll always be, this is a prayer, the perfect me. There's nothing to rearrange. I don't have to rearrange it to be healthy. I'm beautiful. I'm capable of being the best me I can. And I love myself just the way I am. That's right out of the Tao Te Ching. Love yourself where you are, no matter how big the contraction, no matter how big the perceived suffering is. And in that love, something, there's an alchemy. What we teach here is alchemy. This field of love is alchemically shifting us. I watched Anastasia go through a transformation last month. It's beautiful to watch when the alchemy starts to work. Just a titch more of Tao Te Ching. He says, whatever is produced, nature accepts it for what it is. Now, could we know as ourselves a part of this nature? Nature doesn't say it's bad that the worms are on the ground and the robin eats the worms and the spiders are in the web. Whatever is produced, nature accepts it for what it is. However it behaves, nature lets it follow its own way. So such is nature's marvelous sagacity, that means wisdom, that there is equanimity within nature. So then if you're an indigenous person, you say to the tree, teach me and show me the way. You say to the earthworm, teach me and show me the way. And you see the presence of God in all creation. We need an original creation story. It wasn't about Adam and Eve and a snake and eating from the tree of judgment and then needing Jesus' blood to save us. That's what the church fathers would have you believe. But the first book of Genesis, it says, and God created this and said it was good and God created that. So what if the true story of creation, that it's all God's creation? All of it. Well, then how would we respond to it? The Tao Te Ching says this, if one remains silent and keeps to himself, he will not fail to fulfill his life. But he gives advice and meddles in others' affairs, well, then he invites certain trouble. Oh, gosh. If you see what is small as it sees itself and accept what is weak for what strength that fragile thing has, and then use what is dim for the light it gives, then all will go well, and this is called acting naturally. You begin to see the interconnectedness of all life. You know, I think, and this is called the flow. I have this little one-eyed pug, and he's such a teacher for me, because when you begin to realize that we're the net of Indra, that we're the one life, and what happens on one part of the net affects me on this part of the net. And when you have a one-eyed pug who's kind of so dependent on you, it's like he doesn't want to be left alone. He wants to be connected at all times. And so when I go off and working in the garden, he'll stand at the door and bark. I brought him to class on Wednesday because it's his ministry. You talk about having a ministry. He has the ministry. And I came early, as I always do. And Adam was running around. His car was out there. And Humphrey's fallen in love with Adam because they're not really separate. And so Humphrey, with his waddling strength, stood at the door and barked and barked and barked until Adam came in and let him know that I see you, I hear you. And so in that time, I thought he would just sleep like he does. He's an old dog. No, he wanted to connect to everybody that walked in the door. And so he'd go to the next person, and he'd go to the next person, and he would have darshan. He would have a transmission. And I realized this is part of the flow of awakening. And so the first thing is how we manage is we don't resist the flow. The second thing that is even more beautiful and how we can face this crazy life of ours is to enter into trust. Now, trust is a very strange thing because most of us don't have trust. Ernest Holmes says, he who does not trust does not know God. Trust is when you trust in that you don't have the answers. Remember the one that wants all the answers? I can trust that I don't have the answers, but something does. Then I don't have to struggle and shit on myself. I should figure it out. I should have the answers. No, what if life doesn't have an answer? Well, then we get to enter into uncertainty. And then we get to trust that something is giving birth. There's a new order of awakening happening, a new order of being. Now, the yang of me would want to do something, would want to fix something. The yin of me would want to surrender to this this something that trusts. So could we trust in the evolution of your life, in the unfoldment? It's almost like a flowering. When you plant a seed in the garden and you water it, you don't dig it up to see if it's growing. You trust that there's inherent intelligence within that seed to put its roots down and push through the resistance and begin to flower and express itself. Yvonne has two beautiful daughters, and they're both their own unique expression. Now, she may have planted the seed. She gets to nurture and water the seed, but she doesn't have a clue how they're going to flower into life, and neither do they. So what if we could trust in that? You know, when you graduate from high school like I did, they want to know, what are you going to do with your life? I was first in my class. I was going to be a lawyer. Then you go to college and you start taking dance classes and you enter the theater department and you're totally confused. And then if you're smart, you graduate in 3 years and you've got these degrees and they don't mean anything. So then you realize, I didn't have a clue. I should have read Viola Davis's book years ago, but she hadn't written it. I had to find me first. So what if, when the dream falls away, the illusion of you that society has given you, you'll be acceptable if you follow this, we could let that go and trust that there's something, as painful as it is, that wants to give birth through me. When I met Seamus years and years ago, he was in a different marriage and a different belief system in a different church. And you know what had to happen? He had to die to all of that in order for this beautiful man in purple to emerge. And so that's not comfortable, to tell someone you're going to have to die to this false identity and trust that there's something inherent within you that will unfold itself, not through control, not through answers, but through uncertainty and the unknown. Wow. Gosh. Then life's a beautiful adventure. I don't have a clue what's going to happen to our country, but I have a faith that our better angels are going to emerge. And because of people like y'all, we're going to come together in a field of love, accepting all in equanimity, and it has to take place. Remember, when two or more are gathered in a higher vibration, we potentiate that. And so we're all necessary to bring this awareness to the planet. That's what we're doing, to trust that that's enough, Gigi, that you are a space of wisdom and love. I love that she came in and she brought me a coffee, and I said, so what did you put in the coffee? She said, I'm hiding all my contraceptions in your coffee cup. And then, of course, I laughed. And there's the hope that we can, by levity, we can set ourselves free. Because it's insane. What are they going to control next? What we're going to eat? And the third thing that I would suggest, how we make our way in the world, is to bless what is. To bless what is. Whatever is, even if it's painful. John Birney talks about coming to satsang and coming to the center as being in the cooker. That's not comfortable. Rumi talks about the chickpea, the individual self that wants to get out of the soup because it's too, I'm cooking in here. Something is dying. Something is giving birth. And the chickpea tries to jump out of the soup. This is a metaphor. And Rumi takes the spoon and says, get back into the broth, Ari. Get back. You're not fully cooked yet. And so what if we have to, in essence, die to this old sense of who we thought we were, and then this true nature, and we all share the same true nature. It's free. This part of us that's free begins to awaken. And then the free self in me meets the free self in Raul. We're not separate. And then Raul, he dies to his old identity, comes to satsang, falls in love with my satsang member. And then you see how divine love will bring together and maintain together, just like with Tia and Shay, those who belong together. And there's something in charge that's greater than us. We get to trust in that. We get to be in the flow of that, and we get to bless what is. John Birney, in this wonderful class, I love this man. He gives us a beautiful example of blessing what is. I like what Nancy said. You bless what is, and then you work on yourself. There's a lot of what is going around. And he talks about the primary contractions that each one of us have. So our sleuthdom, our inquiry is, where am I contracting? Where am I resisting? Because that's the doorway for your liberation. So could we love that part of ourselves? He calls it the primary contract. He said, freedom lies by profoundly accepting the very thing that you're resisting. That's where your freedom lies. Whoa. You mean I gotta open to my resistance, Serena, and my expectations that are causing me so, my pain body is in so much pain? And when you embrace it, when you listen to it, it has a way to be seen and heard, and it dissipates because it's no longer subversive in your life. This is what he says. Opening to the condition energetically and allowing it to be exactly as it is, then true meditation is being the awareness that perceives the condition is not separate from it. True meditation is where you enter into that silent place, and that silent place becomes the alchemy for freedom from the torment of the local mind. It's very interesting. John Birney talks about meditation, and he says it's a practice. And he talks about enlightenment as our destiny. And he said enlightenment is just an accident. It happens through circumstance. Who knows what's going to enlighten you? And he says, but meditation can make you accident prone. Now that's a joke. Meditation can make you accident prone. The more often you touch the stillness, true meditation, the more often you stop and be here now, the more often you accept what is and you look at it, not with conditioned mind, but with this absolute intelligence that this too is good, this too is God, and this is too is for me, you begin to make that shift. That's accepting, that's blessing what is. We are here to bless. So he says, and that's what satsang is for. It really makes available this presence, this field of beingness. Remember, the yin wants the being, the yang wants the doing. Not that they're mutually separate, but the doing needs to come from the being. Once you enter into that field of divine love, acceptance, freedom, then let your doing be spurred by that. He says, it may facilitate immediate openings and a deepening into a spaciousness, or, and this is what happens with so many, it may bring up and amplify the conditions that we're holding on and that we're caught in resistance. So when this field, it's setting us free, does it feel natural and normal? Or am I experiencing, yeah, but? And when the yeah, but comes up, that's when we embrace the yeah, but. And when the yeah, but has its day in court, it lets go of you. Gradually, you begin to look forward to the shifts that are taking place. We have to find out how it works, and then you simply let it. Find out how it works, and then you let it. So it works by death and rebirth. There's a part of us that's dying daily to be born again in this something. And every day, come knocking at your door, are going to be those patterns that are in your subconscious mind. Invite them in. They're trying to set us free. That's what this is all about, blessing what is. You know, blessing the darkness because it's taking us to the light. My friend Terry Shea did a workshop that was attended by everyone at one of our Circle of Love gatherings. But some people got really Jim Crow about it because his workshop was titled Embracing Your Demons. Now, a lot of religious scientists want to deny that they have any demons. And if you deny the demon, well, the demon becomes powerful over you. So what are the demons within you? Is it the shutting? Is it the shutting demon? Is it the worry demon? And once you embrace them, well, then they don't have power over you anymore. That's the trick. He's saying that very thing. Our conditioning will fight like hell. It's fighting for its life. The ain't it awful person, which ironically doesn't even exist. It's the illusion of you that's fighting for its identity. You know, it's a construct, actually an illusion. And ultimately we see that. And we're not that anymore. You're no longer a victim because you're not identifying with victimhood. Nobody did anything to you. I'm not a victim of the gay prejudice on the planet. There was a time when I thought I was, but I'm not anymore. I'm not afraid to be open and proud of being who I am. It's not something I chose. It's not an aberration or a sickness or an abomination. It's a sacred contract that I had with my soul when I entered into this planet. I see it now as a sacred expression of who I am, so that I might be the voice and the example for my son Finn over there when he's coming out in the same kind of environment where your family doesn't really accept you for who you are. By loving yourself, cultivate the light, he says, and how to bring awareness to a condition so that in that condition the light grows. We're bringing light of awareness to everything. I mean, Yvonne, when you raise your daughters to raise them to know that the light of God's expression unfolds through them, then you don't try to mold them into an idea of who they should be, but you celebrate the emergence of that divine light. That's what meditation truly is. Acceptance, awareness, and openness. And we'll see how that takes us into life. Ultimately, to realize that when you do that, everything in life becomes your teacher. Once you embrace the moment, then the teacher shows up in the smallest of ways. It shows up as your resistance. It shows up as that which you've judged. Remember, Jesus talked about judgment. He says, by your judgment, ye are judged. So when the judging self arises, could we embrace that part of ourselves in kind of a playful sort of way? My husband fantasizes about the perfect career that would be for him. Would be to be a judge. He's often fancies himself as Judge Judy. He says, I'm so good at judging others. And so, you know, he likes to judge me and everything on the planet because he's right and kind of sanctimonious. And I said, okay. And so my neighbor gave me a big bag of bird seed. And I said, we're going to go down to the pond and you get to judge what birds are worthy of receiving the bird seed. So he took his bag of birdseed. Are you going to only give the birdseed to the little chicks that are chasing you down the lane? And of course, the chicks are cute, and he was giving the birdseed. But then the ugly ducks come waddling over. Are they worthy of some of the birdseed? So then he started feeding the ugly ducks. And then before you know it, all the ducks are coming down on him, and he had to use his discernment. Are they worthy of the birdseed? And something with equanimity came, and he's given all the seed away with no favorite. I said, do you see how the judge fell away once your heart opened? So could we get playful with this experience called life and take responsibility for the journey that we're on? I love that idea of be like a child if you would enter the kingdom, because the child in me is the innocent, playful part of me. It's the part of me that has the imagination and the intuition. My adult self has judgment and rationalization and should and suppose and conclusions and behavior modification and all the stuff that I've been handed by the world. And you know what, that this is how you should behave, Anastasia. Don't be too free. She has this wonderful son, Seth, who's just this free spirit. And when I'm around him, I realize we don't need to be saying no to people. We need to invite them to have their own discoveries. And sometimes in life, as we grow up, we learn through our growth journey, you know? And that's the beauty of elderhood. You get to a place where you've lived a long life and you realize life is too precious to try to program it into a delusional idea that somebody handed you along the way. I actually made it to law school because my dad was an attorney. Mom wanted me to be a doctor. I didn't like the sight of blood, so I chose the least worst alternative. And I'm sitting my very first day, and I heard the voice of God saying, "This will kill you." And I listened, and I dropped law school, and that was, and then I entered into the wilderness like Moses described, and all I kept hearing was the voice, "God, I'm a dancer, and a dancer dances," and then I hear that voice, "You're too smart to be a dancer, only faggots are dancers." All this narrative was going on, and so I went back to masters in dance, got my masters in dance, and then I realized I'm 25, I'm really too old for dance, and I'm lying on the dance floor working on my master's thesis, and all of a sudden, this something, this voice within, and it was describing, I'm in the context of the emergence of a creative process. And it says, all creation is discovered. In John Burney's wonderful book, Ordinary Freedom, he talks about how we need to live in the world is to cultivate our beginner's mind. Not our expert mind, not our knowing mind. And I've been plagued by thinking I had to have answers and I had to have direction and goals and focus and this. The beginner's mind is empty. Seth has kind of a beginner's mind. That's why it's so refreshing. He doesn't have a clue. And yet he's open to possibility. And you know, at whatever age you are, the beginner's mind is teachable. I said to beautiful Ari, be the beginner's mind when you go to your new job. A beginner's mind doesn't fight for their conclusions. It says, I'm teachable. So what if we're given a whole new spirituality that says you don't exist as a separate self? The relative self is an illusion. The absolute self that lies stretched in smiling repose that Seamus referenced in his treatment, that's always there. That's deathless and eternal, and that's what we are. Is that too big a pill to swallow? That you are the ocean of love? Rumi says, oh drop, give it up. The ocean for a drop. Jesus says, how boring to be somebody. No, that was Emily Dickinson. How public like a frog to spend your livelong day on an admiring bog. She recognized too, to be a simple somebody in this world is to deny that you're nobody and you're everybody. So the invitation is to get out of the local self that's got all the answers and enter into this divine presence that has no answers. How does that feel, Carly? You're free there. There's something in you that knows. Your mom doesn't know. Ari doesn't know. I don't know. But in oneself lies the whole world. And if you know how to look and learn, now the key is to learn. You got to look within and learn that this thing has always been there for you. It's always been guiding you from the time you were the littlest girl. And then you begin to reference that moment, that guidance system. Yeah, and it's always there. So let's go within to a little meditation. I'll ask my brother Raul to take us in. Oh, I got... You can ring the bell for me, can't you? Bob? Of course you can. Just one time. Well, there you go. For whom the bell tolls. It's called the mindfulness bell. The mindfulness bell has the capacity to have a stop and to enter into that beautiful space that's been waiting for us. We'll call it home. And in this calligraphy on top of the wall behind my head, it says, I have arrived. I am home. Now, home is not a place that necessarily feels safe. And that's kind of a shocking statement. Home is a place of transformation. Home is a place of awakening. Home is a place of returning. And then letting that vibration of whatever this field of energy is that we call home to permeate our existence. And so insight comes not through conclusions and thought, but there is an intuitive guidance system that is beyond thought. We'll call it an awake awareness. And so Locke Kelly, in his beautiful book, Shift into Freedom, he talks about unhooking from thought. You know, just like you would unhook your cufflink. Unhook from thought. And then let your attention, your awareness, fall into that field of pure awareness. An open-hearted awareness. Feel the love that is motivated by that open-hearted awareness. Not a love that wants to attach, a love that wants to possess, a love that has expectations. That's not love. And enter into a love that accepts all things, bears all things, endures all things, and blesses all things. And it's just a simple shift of who am I going to live from in this holy instant of now? Am I going to live from my local relative self, which is programmed and conditioned and suffers a great deal? Or am I going to choose for this sacred holy instant of now to surrender into the aliveness of the One? I love to say to this divine loving presence, this life belongs to you. Do with it as you will. And then trust that through that inner guidance system, through the law of attraction, because we will attract to us everything that is ours by right of consciousness, that we will attract those who reflect who we are and bless them because they've come into our life to reflect back our true nature. In the Quran, it says, Nur ala Nur, light upon light. And so when the light in David awakens and meets the light in Ari, it's the same light seeing itself. And then you recognize that it's one light. The very first expression in the Bible, it says, in the beginning God, the very first words, and darkness was on the face of the earth. You might say it's the face of God. And God said, let there be light. And the phrase that was used was Shekinah, which is the light within. And so as we turn to this light within ourselves as an energy, and we invite its radiance, knowing that it will never die, well, then we begin to experience the light in others. The light within us sees the light in everything. And then when the world comes to us with its darkness, we sleuth-like look into that darkness and we see the light hiding in there and say, I see you, you're in there, waiting to come forth. And then there's equanimity that flowers. When the dark times come, we let the light within us shine. And there certainly are dark times right now. And so we rest in that radical calmness, in that peace that passes all understanding. It's not a peace that you earn. It's not a peace that you get. It's a peace that is. It's already there. And so simply by stopping and ringing the bell, we breathe into that peace. And we breathe out from that peace. And we recognize that we can offer this to the world. So when Serena will call me and she's all upset, I can open my peaceful heart and offer her that. And she can choose to take refuge there. Or she can stay in a fragmented thought pattern. And we realize that how we travel in this world is that simple. We can choose to open to that which is already there, inviting us into the freedom of our being, free to be peaceful, free to be in harmony with what is. Or we could choose to resist until resistance just becomes too much effort. And then we laugh at resistance. Here she shows again. We stomp our foot, we get angry, and then we don't. We don't stomp the foot anymore. We just see it as one of life's contractions. Huh. And so I invite you to find that smile of the beloved. It's a smile of acceptance. It's a smile of curiosity. It's a smile of spontaneity. I'm not smiling. Something within me is smiling. And could we smile to the life that we've been given?
Well, it's kind of a crazy life. It's got a lot of ups and downs.
I said, I know, but hasn't that made it just excitingly vibrant to go through the ups and downs of life until you get to a place where you're not operating at the circumference anymore, where the merry-go-round goes ups and down, and the painted ponies and all that stuff, and you were captive on the carousel of time. And then we find the center of the carousel, where something is smiling. And then we look at ourselves on the pony going up and down, screaming and riding, and, ay, ay, ay. And then we step into the center of the carousel, and we're free. We're at peace. We found our center. We found the balance. We found the wholeness. And as we hang out in that wholeness, in that peace, in that stillness, in that love, in that humor, in that innocence, we start to heal. By healing, I mean that which is healthy and whole begins to reveal itself, and that which wasn't begins to fall away. And all we've done is turn toward the light. All we've done is trust in the unknown. All we've done is allow for the flow of awakening throughout this long and adventurous life. This which is awakened is continuing to awaken within its creation, and we are that. And when we come together in satsang, in a collective energy, we are potentiating this divine energy that is the energy of God's love. Tatwam asi, thou art that. All there is that. And so in honor of that, let's join together in the heart salutation by putting your hands on your heart and saying to this ineffable presence that we are, I honor you.
I respect you.
I love you. You are the shimmering light of the One. Shining through my heart. Shimmering through my eyes. Dancing through my smile. Knowing through my soul that all is good and all is God, and I demand to see the blessing. With gratitude and playfulness, I open to this eternal discovery. And open your eyes, your beginner's mind, your beginner's heart. Lift your hands into the air. Feel that gesture of receptivity. You're being zapped by the universe. Become a transmitter and a receiver. And it's done. You are it. And so it is. Yeah.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, visit our website at www.cslhuntsville.org.